Support for this program is brought to you by listeners like you. Thank you.
The Local Thread.
Hello and welcome to TPS Proud Out Loud. I'm Patty Mazur, Executive Director of Communications with Toledo Public Schools. During the next hour, we're going to explore the importance of early childhood education and the importance of enrolling students in these foundational programs. The benefits for our community's youngest learners are recognized, and research shows their needs are being met. Early childhood education provides critical, long-term advantages, including enhanced cognitive development, better social-emotional skills, and improved academic performance. Children in high-quality programs often develop stronger language, literacy, and motor skills, leading to higher graduation rates and improved health throughout their lives. These programs foster independence, socialization, and a lifelong love of learning. And today I'm joined by two folks that are very entrenched in the early childhood program with Toledo Public Schools. We have Ms. Tanika Harris. She is the policy chair for the Head Start Committee through Toledo Public Schools. She is a graduate of Head Start. She is a parent and now grandparent of students through the program. And we have Ann Newton, who is the Senior Director of Early Childhood Programming for Toledo Public Schools. And I think it's important to note that Toledo Public Schools is the largest Head Start provider in Northwest Ohio. So Ann, what does that mean?
So we're a very large program with Head Start in Lucas County. We service 766 preschool-age children in our program with Head Start. We also have a variety of other opportunities within our organization. We can meet the needs of all kids in a variety of different ways.
And early childhood, as the research shows, is a foundational platform in so many ways for our youngest learners. What are the grades? What are the ages, I guess I should say, not grades necessarily, that the program serves?
So when we talk about ages, preschool is considered ages 3 to 5. So any child that's between the ages of 3 to 5 is eligible to go to preschool and many, many high-quality programs we have here in Northwest Ohio. If they're infants and toddlers, that's ages birth until the age of 3. So that's distinction in the world of early childhood is you have preschoolers, ages 3 to 5, and then infants and toddlers are from birth until age 3. We also know that 90% of the brain development happens before the ages of 5. So that's why it's really important that you look at the program where you're going to enroll your child at and make sure of high quality. So all the things that Patty has mentioned previously in terms of language development and social skills and all those foundations basically happen before the age of 5, because that's when all the brain development's happening. So we need to keep those young brains active and learning and putting really good information in those young brains before the ages of 5.
So the idea of these programs before kindergarten gives students a quote-unquote head start, right?
Definitely. So, you know, we also focus a lot on the students' social skills, because that's extremely important when the kids are coming into our classroom in the fall. Just simple taking turns, keeping your hands to yourself, getting along with your friends, all those social skills are key in development and the foundation of getting them ready for kindergarten. So when the students transition to kindergarten, they're already used to the structure of a day of a kindergarten setting. So those are really, really critical when you talk about what really matters in early childhood. A lot of people just want to focus on ABCs and 1, 2, 3, but there's so much more in the area of socialization that's really important in our field.
And having parents and grandparents involved, I think, is probably one of the key foundations to this as well. And that's where Ms. Harris comes in and can talk about the work and the positive impact that Head Start and early childhood has had on her family. Talk to us about that.
as Ms. Patty mentioned, I had an opportunity to be a very active parent with the family engagement part of Head Start that they are offering to blend the families together with the teachers and the students so that they know that we're all a team. That's the main thing. Let them know that we're all working together. And upon doing this family engagement, I was introduced to Missy Sosa, who's over the program. She referred me to get in with the Policy Council, where we're trying to get the parents to be active and more involved in the whole program so that they can learn that their voices matter, any concerns, any issues that they feel that we can work on to keep things going and flowing for the children. And with my granddaughter seeing these things, she was dealing with a lot of emotional things going on with her. But going to Head Start and meeting new friends and learning to socialize and use her skills with communicating and the expressions and things like that, it really helped her. So they created a little corner called Let's Talk About It. And she was one of the like emotional supports of the classroom, where she wanted to save everybody, but it also helped her as well. So her and Missy Sosa did this thing called Let's Talk About It, and she brought that home to us. So when she would see things getting kind of out of hand at home, she would say, well, let's just talk about it, you know, and we're like, you know, where are you getting this Let's Talk About It from? So that's how I, you know, started getting interested in, okay, I'm going to meet these teachers and stuff and see what's going on and see how, you know, I like how they're doing this, because she was very excited to tell her brothers when they were doing things, let's talk about it. It's okay, you know. So that was very good for her. And upon doing that as well, I was introduced to Policy Council, where I met Miss Nicole Shetterly, and she's over the family engagement program as well, and do the programs together or put everything where we can all meet and we come together with the child doing activities. And if their siblings want to become a part, they can do that as well. And in this, we learned to do the Parent Ambassador program. I was able to go to places like Columbus, some of the outskirts of Ohio as well, and meeting with other advocates for the parents and everything. And we went as far as Washington, and we were able to tell our stories, our reason why, and which my reason why was I was a grandparent raising grandchildren after, you know, sending my children. So I got back into it, and it was well worth it. It was very beneficial for the family, and I could tell others about it. And with me being policy chair, now I'm able to ask them where they live. I can do like a zone where they are to find out different centers and everything. And that's really all I have to say about that part of it, but it was really a good experience. And now I can tell others from my experience and invite them and, you know, get excited for them to come along, because it really does help and to see you involved with the child.
How old was your granddaughter when
she... At the time, she was 3.
Okay.
She was 3. She started in the early childhood, and she was there until, you know, the five years old at Robinson.
Okay.
That was our main headquarters. Okay. So
she starts this Let's Talk About It process corner and has taken that to the point now where brings it at home. And what grade is she in now?
She's in the second grade now.
Okay. And just, I'm sure, lighting the world on fire every day.
She is still with the Let's Talk About It, but it's with attitude now. You know, so
as she should. But does that give you comfort to know in your work as an advocate that you are not alone?
Yes.
Do you think that is an important thing, that other parents that could be grandparents as well, facing some of the same things that you have?
Yes, that's why we would love for them to come out, you know, more and more and get more involved into the Policy Council, the Parent Ambassador program and things like that, so we can hear from different aspects. I've come into contact with many parents that may not have had the transportation to really get their children there, but coming along the group, you meet people. You know, you become like it becomes like a sisterhood, or if the fathers are involved, and we really need fathers, we really need them. We're even thinking about putting spaces in the classrooms for them to make them more comfortable instead of just dropping off and, you know, leaving. Maybe they may have a little comfy chair or something in there for them. They can maybe sit and read or something. But it really helps the parents to get to know one another and maybe create a system where we can do carpooling and things like that as well for those that do still believe in togetherness.
And building that at such a young age gives students, I would think, an even greater respect for education, seeing that their parents or grandparents, their family was involved. What does that, and talk about how that impacts the benefit of the program overall and how you've seen that success?
So we clearly see success when the parents are actively involved with the students. And it's not just parents. It could be grandparents. It can be aunts, it's uncles. Older siblings are huge in these children's lives. So when they're actively involved in what's happening, we see a lot of success in the classroom. We do this in a variety of formats where we could send activities home for the families to complete together. So there's family engagement activities. Some are just might be a simple art project. Some may work on some more concept development. Some might be reading to the children, because that's so critical for the language development, is just sit down and read and talk with your children. So we see a lot of families engaged in that way, and that's what we encourage. We also have family engagements on Friday for our families to come out to. We just had a sweetheart skate at the ribbon, which is the highlight for me every single year, is to see the little ones out there on skates with their parents. And some are pushing penguins around, and some are being pushed around the rink by their whoever can push them. And some parents have never skated before. And it's even better yet because the staff is out there with the kids. So it's just a true blessing that the Metro Parks provide to us for that family engagement event. And then we encourage the families then to go do this again with your children. So with the Metro Parks, we have four or five different activities that we partner with throughout the year. And then it just gets the families the confidence to take the kids out and be in nature and let those kids play and be kids. We also partner with the libraries. So for a family engagement Friday, we invite the parents to bring the children to the library. And so with the teachers there, the parents are more comfortable. They get their library card set up. They can see all the different opportunities that they have. And then hopefully it gives the parents the confidence to bring them back again, because they've already been there once and it's much more in their comfort zone. We do the same thing with the art museum. We have time at the art museum, and the parents can go in the children's area with the kids, and there's a planned activity, and that encourages them to take them again to the art museum for open activities. So parents are key in the children's development. They're only with us for a short period of time. They're with their families more than they're with us. So we really need to educate our parents to support the children's development.
And that is, I think, a key component of the program. Not only are we working with the students, we're working with the families and giving sometimes a family that has maybe never had the experience of going to the ribbon or going to the art museum, helping them overcome maybe that apprehension and getting them in the door and taking them through an activity, then they can feel that confidence, as you said, to go back. And if they can't come to one of these planned events, as you said, there are things they can do at home to show encouragement in their student's education. And that's just as important, don't you think?
Definitely, 100%. Mm-hmm. Any way we can get those parents to be engaged with their students is the biggest thing we can do. And sometimes, you know, as a parent ourselves, we get frustrated at times, and it's okay. And just to really be truly a family support, a partner, that we're walking hand in hand with these parents. Because, you know, parenting is a lot at times, and just giving them some more skills to handle situations that you're going to encounter.
Gotcha. Ms. Harris, talk about what would you say to a parent or a grandparent who has a 3 to 5 year old at home? And they're, well, I don't know that they're ready for early childhood education programming. What do you say to them?
I would say stay ready so you don't have to get ready, and just send them anyway, because whatever they don't have, they will get, because they learn from one another. They feed off of each other. And then if the parent get involved as well with them, they'll learn even more. They'll be more excited to learn, because now they'll see the communication with the teachers and their parent, and they'll see, you know, just the overall picture of it. So they'll have fun learning and growing together with their friends.
And as a grandparent, again, the benefit that you've had from being involved.
It was very, I was kind of, I won't say timid at first because I've done it, but it was something different for the grandchildren, you know, because they were just different. They weren't my children to, you know, to have lived with and started out. But once I had the opportunity to be the actual person to get them involved and be there with them, it helped me so much, so much more to know that I could go to Missy Sosa, I could call Miss Nicole, I could speak with the teacher about certain things that may needed to be addressed a little more, or let them know the concerns that I may have had or the struggles with having different age groups, because I had what was two in, one in early Head Start, one in Head Start, one in elementary school, and then I had the older sister who's now 16. She was in, you know, regular school. So me trying to be outside for the bus, the buses mm-hmm. were coming a little bit then. So trying to just finagle every day was different. If I missed the bus, then now I have to take them all. But then one is at this school and one is at that school, so then I had to go through this attendance thing. You know, it was just a struggle every day. But once they saw the struggle, but they saw the consistency in me, then I began to engage more. And that's where the problem kind of simmered down, and I knew exactly what to do and where I could go. And that was very important for us.
And you see this as the foundation for your granddaughter's success in school?
Yes, I do.
That's fantastic. What's the last thing you want to say to the listeners for this segment about the importance of early childhood program?
It's okay to not be okay, because also with family engagement and getting involved, if there's a need for shelter, food, any kind of help, that's available for us too. They have pantries. They have, it's so much stuff that they do have. You just have to be willing to know that they're working together with you and not against you.
And that's
the key. And just not, you can't be afraid to talk. I was always taught that a closed mouth doesn't get fed. So
there you go.
You have to stay ready so you don't have to get ready.
And that's a great way to end this first segment, Ms. Harris. And thank you very much. You'll be back with us the next segment, and we will say thank you to our guests, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to TPS Proud Out Loud. We are continuing our discussion about the importance of early childhood education and how it can be viewed as the foundation for why students can succeed as they move through their education from preschool all the way through high school. And we are joined again by Ann Newton, who is the Senior Director for Early Childhood Education for Toledo Public Schools. And we're also joined now by Mrs. Donna Campbell, who is a preschool teacher at Crossgates. Tell us about a typical day in a preschool class.
Our day at preschool thrives on routine. So as a preschool teacher, we strive to make that routine very predictable for the children. So when they come to school, that puts their anxiety at ease and they know what the expectations are. So when they arrive, I stand at the doorway, greet the family, greet the student, nice big smile, so they have that welcome right from the beginning. We embed learning into every daily routine. So at arrival, they collect their name card, so they're having, you know, name recognition, and they come into the classroom, and they're building their independence, so we encourage them to take care of their belongings, their personal belongings. Where does my coat go? Where do I put my backpack? Where do I check in with my name card? How do I transition to the carpet and begin my day? We go over our daily schedule. So we have pictures that are posted in the classroom. So we'll look at the pictures. We'll talk about what time it is, what's going to happen next. So we have a balance of activities. We do a variety of whole group learning where the students are seated together on the carpet. And that's where we do a lot of our social emotional learning. We do a lot of our literacy lessons together on the carpet. We balance that with opportunity for student choice at center time, where they can travel through the classroom, go to the different centers, engage in play-based learning. Also embedded into our routine are typical school experiences, walking down the hallway to go to the cafeteria. So we, our preschoolers do have a school meal, so they may have a breakfast, a lunch, or a snack, depending on their schedule.
It almost sounds like you're building their soft skills.
Mm-hmm.
Starting them at what grade, or what age, I should say.
So we have 3-year-olds, 4-year-olds, and 5-year-olds. So they're together in one classroom setting. It depends on when their birthday may fall. If we have some students who are older, but they can come in starting at age 3.
Okay. And the benefits that you see versus from a student who has been through your program, say, versus a student or one of our young learners in our community that has not mm-hmm. had the benefit, what do you see are the differences?
I would say what jumps out to me is the social and emotional learning that they can experience in a mm-hmm. preschool classroom, learning how to be outside of the home and how to be around other students and how to listen to another adult that's not mom, dad, or my grandma, and follow directions, how to wait for a turn. So those very typical kind of school expectations. Another thing, and it's a personal reason why I'm very passionate about teaching preschool, is building their self-help skills. And so we see our students come to the classroom and they just don't know how to take care of themselves, because it's very part of a young child is that their family is helping them quite a bit. And we help them also, but in every way that we can, we kind of inch them towards independence. So we have some students talking about coming into the classroom. We have some students that are ready. Okay, I take my coat off. I unzip my coat. It goes in my cubby. To where I still have students, they come in the classroom and they're still not sure. So, okay, we're going to take our coat off. Hold on to your zipper, pull down, kind of walking them through those steps. But once they start to feel secure in what they can do, you can really see that snowball. Okay, I can take my coat off and find my cubby. What can I do next? And so you really see their self-help skills start to grow and improve.
Those first few days of school must be a challenge.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
they're at the very basic at the starting line to
yes.
say. And mom might be leaving them, dad might be leaving mm-hmm. them for the first time. But getting them through that transition from your classroom to elementary school, and talk about the benefit of that, building that transition of not having the anxiety for a student.
So if you talk to a kindergarten teacher in the fall when the students are first starting kindergarten, I would say they can identify a student that's been in a high-quality preschool program because they have those skills that she just explained. They know how to take their jackets off. They may know how to tie their shoes. They know those skills that are so important. And so those kids that have been in a high-quality program are such an advantage because they're used to the structure of school. If you have a child that has never had the structure of school, has just coming from home, they're not used to those simple things of taking turns, standing in line, keeping them hands to themselves. So that's why early childhood is so important, not just for the ABCs and the 1-2-3s, is to get a good school readiness routine in place.
I had the opportunity to visit one of our elementary schools for an open house for kindergarten. And there was this young lady. She was not having it. I don't want to do this. I'm not going. And grandma was with her. And so I was sort of walking her around and, hey, look at this. Look at that. I said, look at all these crayons. I have crayons at home. What do you say to a student who, or a family who has that apprehension or that young lady who might be a little stubborn about making that transition?
So one way that we try to help in that area is to really lean in to personal interest. So our program will have a lot of opportunities for family members to tell a teacher, these are the topics my student is interested in, these are the things they like to play with. And just having that background knowledge could maybe say, hey, you like to draw a picture of, and I could say her favorite animal or something. We also encourage families, I can share from my classroom, to provide family photos. And so we have, it's at student eye level, just a collage of family photos. So if they're feeling maybe some anxiety or resistance to being at school. So sometimes we could say, you miss your family. Let's look at their picture. Do you want to show a friend? So we have friends that go over. We have students that they point and they show each other their family photos. So just trying to keep that family connection and tap into student interests. And we get a lot of that information from the family. So it's a team effort.
And I think that's important. It goes back to the whole idea of the program's not just serving the student, which we have the research and the data shows the benefits, how you all work to keep the families engaged as well. And talk about what, I mean, you talked about the skating programs, you talked about the visits to the museum. What else can parents do to stay engaged in their youngest student's education?
So parents and caregivers, just talking with the teachers on a regular basis, making that personal connection with the teachers, because the teachers can give you a wealth of knowledge and ideas of what's happening in the classroom. So that connection. We also connect with families electronically, because that's the easiest way for communication. So there's a lot of communication done through emails or through Class Jojo, which is an app that a lot of the teachers use, just to provide that ongoing communication. And the teachers can send it to the parents, and the parents can take that information and then have conversations with their children about it. So they may send a picture that they were doing a project in the classroom. And let's say the project was on trees. So then the parents then can go upon that and talk about trees or do something with the trees or do something with the leaves. So they really, really build those partnerships with the parents. And the biggest thing parents can do is also just continue to read with their children and talk with their children. So if they have the chance in the car, just have a conversation, talk about their scene, play rhyming games, those basic skills parents can do in terms of talking with their children. And we can tell a big difference of children that have had that language development as opposed to kids that are not exposed to it. So many times, and I think adults are guilty of this too, we spend too much time with our electronics and we rely on that a lot. And the basic communication of talking back and forth with your children is key to their development.
And that is so important. And we talk about, is it too early to for a three-year-old, five-year-old, them to come home and you say, what did you do in class today? What did you do at school today? Because that's certainly a question that we encourage parents to ask as their children progress through school. Is that okay to ask at this age?
It is very okay. It shows, it'll give the ongoing message to the child that their family also values school and wants to know about their day. I have learned through experience and from talking with families that it might be hard for a three-year-old or a four-year-old to answer that question, or they might just say they played because they did play, but they learn through play. So their play is so much more. We embed lessons into the play centers. And so, yes, they did play, but they learned a variety of things. So I try to help, like Ann mentioned, to share information with families. I make an effort as a teacher to do that on a weekly basis so that the families can maybe guide that conversation with their child. I share what title books we're reading so they could say, did you read Lola Wants a Cat today? I talk about the new toys that we might put in our center. So maybe they could say, did you play in the veterinarian office? Did you build with the blocks today? I talk about how things did, a little follow-up from the week before. The students seemed to really enjoy you know, this activity from last week. This week we're going to focus on this. So try to help provide the information that could help guide those conversations at home.
And parents, we all know, right, parents, everybody's busy these days. So that's that connection that maybe they can't attend one of your events, but they know, okay, here are some of the things that over the weekend I can ask or I can talk to my child about. And maybe they pick up the book at the library over the weekend and they read it at home again. Mm-hmm. So it's all of those things. So it doesn't matter how parents are involved, just that they mm-hmm. are involved. And I love the idea of the class dojo. We did a recent parent survey, and that's what parents want to know. Mm-hmm. Sure, they want to know the basics, and they want to know, what's for lunch today, and the regimen of what's going on. But they want to know what's happening in Ms. Campbell's mm-hmm. class, and how students are. Show me the picture, the happy picture of the class, so they know that students are engaged. What do you do when you find a student that maybe is, like you said, maybe having a rough day, and so they need to see the parent photo? But I'm sure, I mean, kids are like people, right? The adults, sometimes we mm-hmm. go through bad times. How do you help that student get through that?
So we have a variety of tools that are an important part of our preschool classroom, and that is with our social-emotional curriculum. We have an area in the classroom that's there every day, and we call it our safe space. So it's kind of tucked away from the busy block area, the active pretend play kitchen. So it's kind of quiet, and we have visuals on the wall. We have pictures of different emotions. So it's even titled, "How Are You Feeling?" We have techniques of deep breathing that we teach the students. We do it together as a big group. So when someone is just having an off day, a sad day, I had a student come in today just tired, mm-hmm. you know, just had a hard time sleeping, and we got that message. So I walked him over to the mm-hmm. safe place, and it's kind of like an area where they can calm down, regroup themselves. We, as a class, have strategies like wishing someone well. So we actually have a board on the wall, and it's our wish well board, and has every picture of a student. So if someone is absent, we say that we wish our friend well today, and aww. We put their picture on a heart that's in the middle of the board, because we don't know why they're not home. So we want to wish mm-hmm. them well. So we can say that to someone that's having a difficult moment. Mm-hmm. Maybe someone is upset. Maybe they're crying. They're just a little unwilling to participate. Mm-hmm. We could wish them well in the moment. We can maybe take a deep breath with them. You know, let's all take a breath. Our friend needs our help right now. Or guide them over mm-hmm. to look at their family picture. Mm-hmm. So a lot of strategies that we have embedded in the classroom. Because that definitely
that
does
so
happen.
Much. I yeah. want one of those walls down at the administration mm-hmm. office.
I'll help you with that.
Okay, that would be great.
If I could piggyback on yeah. this too, is one thing when she's talking, they're having the students identify what their feelings are. Because so many times they have big emotions, but they don't know what mm-hmm. they really are. So she's teaching them what those emotions truly are. So mm-hmm. how are you feeling? Those different types of language is what she's embedding when she's talking through all these different areas.
That's so great. What is the one thing when a student at the end of the year walks out of your classroom that you want to be able to say, what was that aha moment?
I hope that I can help my students find their own voice. And what I mean by that is to just be assertive in expressing themselves and what they want and what they need, whether they want to be comfortable asking an adult for help, saying, can I play with you? Can I have a turn? Or even telling someone, I don't like that. So having those personal boundaries, I hope that I can help them be confident in expressing themselves as they move on to the next grade.
What a great wish for all of your students, and anybody that goes through your classroom is certainly truly blessed. And we will see you back here for the next segment. Mrs. Campbell, thank you so much. I might stop out and say hello one day.
I would love that.
I want a heart.
thank
you all
thank
very
you.
Much. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to TPS Proud Out Loud. We are continuing our discussion today about early childhood education. And this segment, we're going to talk about early intervention and meeting the needs of all students through inclusion, diversity, early intervention, all of the things that we look for when it comes to making sure students are successful in meeting those needs. And we are now joined, Ann Newton is still here with us, and we are now joined with Mrs. Alexis Anke, and she is the Director of Student Services for Preschool. Tell us what your role is in the whole preschool scope of the program.
So I have a variety of roles. One of them includes supervising our special ed preschool teachers at various locations throughout the district. I also work with Help Me Grow, an early intervention for students that are enrolled in those services right now. Once they hit the 2.5 month mark, they come to us and have what's called a preschool transition meeting. And then we start talking about what preschool services could look like as they transition from early intervention, Help Me Grow. So we talk about preschool and TPS, and we talk about the eligibility process. So typically when students are in Help Me Grow, they're there because they have different needs that they're working on in the home or in the community. And so they are coming to us now to see if they are still eligible for services. So I oversee that assessment process for TPS. We partner closely with those agencies, Lucas County Board of DD, to see those kiddos. We take their information from early intervention. We have a team of psychologists who review them. And then we either determine whether they need to come in for a screening or a full assessment. And so I participate in that process and determine how students are placed after they come in, and we determine if they're eligible or not. So I oversee that piece of it, and then I go out once our students are placed to kind of troubleshoot and give some tips and tricks to our teachers if they need any, or if they notice the student might need a little bit more support than what they're currently getting. I may come out, do some observations, and making sure that we include the family in the process as well.
So when you talk about early intervention and meeting the needs of all students, that runs the gamut from A to Z.
Yes.
Give us an example of.
So we might have a family that comes in and they're concerned about the speech of their child. And so maybe it's they're not talking at all. And so they come in. We may do a screening or an assessment and determine whether they need speech therapy or occupational therapy services. There are times that families will come in, they've registered for preschool, they come to open house, and then they realize, I don't know if this classroom is going to have what my child needs. And so there are times at the beginning of the year that we'll get those phone calls. And so we try to assist as quickly as we can and reassure families that we have a wide variety of options for all student needs in our program. So while we have our general education classrooms that can meet the needs of our peer students, we also have special education classrooms for preschool as well. So if we have a parent come in that's concerned about the physical development of their child, they're not talking, and they need a full evaluation, we can make that happen in a couple of ways. They might come in through our assessment office, or if they are enrolled in a gen ed program already, they may go through a school-based assessment, and the psychologist right there on site works with the teacher and the family to complete that school-based assessment.
So we've talked a lot about the parent and the family connection today, and this just reassures and confirms that link and how important it is for families to be active and to connect with the education process.
Yeah, our families are key in so many aspects, especially this area, because the family knows that child.
Right.
They know exactly what works for that child and perhaps mm-hmm. what doesn't work for this child. And families have to go through a process of recognizing where their kids are at developmentally. And they'll reach out to Alexis's office and say, I have some concerns. And it's Alexis's job to listen to what the parents have to say about their child and then determine the next steps. So she mentioned a child coming in with speech. So they may come in and say, I'm really concerned because my child's speech is not right. Alexis and the team talks with them and they determine, you know what? your child's okay. It's just developmental. Mm-hmm. And those sounds are going to come along. Mm-hmm. However, she also gets calls and referrals from doctor's offices that says you need to reach out to your school district because I think there might be a little bit more going on with this child. And so she can bring the student in at that point, and they can do some more intense testing to make sure we can meet that child's needs within our buildings. So we bring them in, and we assess, and we say, okay, I think this child needs to come and be in a special ed classroom, and they can learn from their peers, and it's the best thing you can do for your child. So many of our parents are a little hesitant, I would say, about putting a child with a lot of needs in school at such a young age. But after they get in that classroom and they see all the great things that are happening, all the supports being provided to that child, they're so excited to see the growth in their child. So it takes a lot of trust, and we understand that, and that's why we have teachers as strong as Donna Campbell that can build that trust with the parents so that they come to us and then they can grow so quickly.
That's a great way to put it, Alexis. So you're seeing things from, again, one end of the spectrum to the other. What are the limitations that we as a district, do we have any as far as what we can offer students, or are we're pretty inclusive?
We are pretty inclusive. We have a wide range of environments for our preschool students. So like I said, that gen ed setting, and then we also have two other options for preschool. So one is kind of in the middle. It's what's called an integrated classroom. And so this is where 50% of our students have an IEP or have a student with a disability. And then the other half are general education peers or peer models. And so that classroom is set up where it is taught by an intervention specialist who is also dual licensed as a gen ed teacher. So they can meet the needs of all students in their classroom. And so our students with IEPs, they are placed there so that they can have strong peer models to learn some of those social skills, language modeling skills, and things like that. From there, for our students that are a little more involved and may need a higher student-to-adult ratio, we have what's called a preschool special education classroom, which is only for students with IEPs. They're not peers in that classroom. However, our goal is ultimately to get those students that are in those classrooms the skills and the awareness of the peers around them and how to mimic and model what another peer is doing by the time they are in that special education classroom to get them to that point so they can then transition to a less restrictive setting. So our goal is always to meet them where they're at and provide that type of support. But then once they're ready for a little more challenge, then we're ready to have that conversation and move them on.
And the again, it goes back to that transition and the trust and the family connection. I love that. We talk about student services and what parents need to look for and what parents need to know. When do parents need to start the process? When should they begin thinking about early childhood, kindergarten, all of those things? What's the age? What's the magic number?
I would say as soon as possible. Mm-hmm. I mean, if we go down the rabbit hole of our parenting and teen program within TPS, pre-birth, in utero, really, and thinking about the choices that they're making while that baby is still growing, and then even after that. So we have a partnership with Early Head Start. So even before they come to us as threes, we have all of these other avenues that can be explored. So that's the benefit of early intervention, is to looking into some of those things to see, you know, maybe if they are delayed in speech a little bit, having someone check it out and just see, is this developmentally appropriate or do we need to look at something else? So I can give you a personal experience. My youngest, I have three kids, and my youngest went through early intervention. Mm-hmm. He was born during COVID, lots of masks. And so we didn't know at the time what the effect would be. But for him, it came out as he was 2 years old and not talking as much, where he had two older siblings, and so it could have been environmental. They were talking for him. It could have been the situation with COVID and the masks and not being able to have exposure to as much language and seeing your mouth moving and everything. So we took advantage. We went through early intervention. He was assessed. He had a family service plan to focus on communication, and it was so beneficial. They came into the the home, and they really just, like Donna talked about, embedding it into the classroom routines. They helped us to embed it within our home routines and to make these quick little changes that really weren't so hard. So one example was just sitting on the floor and using my older children as models for him. Mm-hmm. And so they would roll a ball back and forth, and they would ask him a question and say, Charlie, what's your favorite mm-hmm. color? And then they would wait, which was good for them, instead of responding for him like they'd done. They would wait, and then he would answer, and then they would roll him the ball. So just simple little things like that. It's never too early. And then eventually, after a few months, he graduated, no longer needed services, and he went through 2 years of our TPS preschool program as a peer. That's always our goal, is to identify that need early and then intervene mm-hmm. if needed early to get them to as far as they can possibly go.
What a great story you have to share with a parent who may be hesitant.
Yes.
But again, you realized there was an issue, a mm-hmm. situation, and you addressed it. The idea of doing this as soon as possible, getting students enrolled as soon as possible. There's testing. There are things that have to be done. Do they need release forms from a doctor to come to preschool?
They do not. So a lot of parents, some parents think that they may need something before they come to us. They don't. You can come as you are, mm-hmm. with or without a diagnosis. If you have something, that's always helpful, because if you're requesting an evaluation, we'll take any information, data you have to make the best decision we can. So that's always helpful to provide that. However, it's not required. If a parent is coming in, they're noticing concerns, the first thing we'll do is we'll get some information from them. So we'll ask about their child's development in all areas, ask about what their concerns are, and then really tailor it to their needs.
Gotcha.
So the earlier they can do that, the better, because there are the timelines with the evaluation. So the sooner they can get it in, especially if you're thinking about coming to preschool or kindergarten in the fall, now would be a great time to try to reach out to get something started so that your student is starting in the fall with the appropriate supports in place.
And talk to us about what that process might look like for a parent who is considering their student for enrollment in the fall.
So right now is the time for parents to start looking at different options for their kids for preschool. And so remember, preschool is ages 3 to 5. Some people think, oh, preschool is just right before you go to kindergarten. But no, we'll start them at 3 to 5. And there's a variety of options out there in the community. And just look at your high quality options. We have a website at TPS that has a lot of enrollment information on that. But all of the spots in preschool fill up early. So we need parents to act now for fall next year. So look at different options, make some decisions, make phone calls, and really look for a high-quality program for your child to be in.
And the process, once you've made that decision, just depends on the provider that you choose, what the enrollment process might be. But those are all things that parents need to take into account right now.
Correct. There's lots of online enrollment options for parents to get the process started. So there's online enrollment options. You can call the providers that you're looking at, talk with other people to see where they've had really good experiences for early childhood programming. So the biggest thing I cannot say enough is the process starts now. Don't wait until August and say, oh, I want to enroll my child in preschool, because a lot of programs will be filled up by the time August hits. So plan ahead and enroll now, or get the process started now as opposed to waiting.
And are there things then that once a student is confirmed and enrolled, that a parent or a family should do over the summer to get that student ready for, quote unquote, the first day of school?
Yes, there's definitely things they can do. Just having them socialize with other students, and that could be as simple as going to the playground. In the summertime is a great time to go to the playground, let them socialize, interact with other children, read to your child, play with your child, go outside with your child, go for walks with your child, talk to your child. All those things are so key in getting them ready for school.
And the whole idea of, okay, this is going to be all right, we're going to make a transition, you're going here now for so many hours a day. I'm going to drop you off. I'm going to come back and get you. How do you deal with that, those first day jitters?
So with our students with and without special needs, we have a couple of approaches. So when they're transitioning into preschool, we will offer a lot of times a tour to the family where they can come in with the child to see the actual building, to see the classroom, meet the teacher, the principal, and just see where does pickup happen, where does drop-off happen. Look at the schedule of the day with your child, and really so they see you as a partner within the building. You're there together. They're a little more comfortable. And then the other thing we work on is transitioning our preschoolers to kindergarten. And so every spring we meet with our families and we come up with a transition plan for what they can do over the summer for our students that are peers and have special needs. So our peers, it might look like some of the things that Anne has mentioned. And our students with special needs, it may be a little more individualized depending on what their goals are. So if it's they have a speech goal, they might talk to the parent about labeling things in your environment or meeting the child where they're at. If a student has a fine motor goal, they might encourage Play-Doh at home or giving them some scissors and supervising them while they're snipping some paper at home, just to work on those pre-kindergarten skills, things that we know are going to make them successful. Because when we talk to kindergarten teachers, they tell us, you know, we can do the ABCs and 1-2-3s, but we really want to see if they can follow a routine, take care of themselves, take care of their own needs, and express their wants and needs clearly. And so that's what we really want to encourage all families to do over the summer to get ready.
That's awesome. So in the final minute or so we have left, what is the one thing you want prospective parents, whether it's someone looking at TPS or another program in Northwest Ohio, what do you want them to know?
I just want them to know that there is something for every child in Northwest Ohio, whether that's a student with no needs or a student with multiple intensive needs. We have something for everyone. I don't ever want a parent to think that my child can't come here or they have too many needs, because that is not the case. We have highly qualified staff that are very caring and patient, with lower student ratios for students who need it, and lots of strategies and resources that we can have to really meet students where they are.
Anne, how about you? Really quick.
Biggest thing, register early. It's that time. Start thinking about what you're going to do with your child in the fall. Programs still are registering some students now, too. So if you have a three-year-old and you're like, okay, I think I want to start this, there's room in some programs across Northwest Ohio right now. But the fall is key, so just get registered early.
Great advice, ladies. Thank you both so much. I really appreciate your time today. That's the end of another week's episode of TPS Proud Out Loud. I want to thank my guests, Ms. Tanika Harris, Mrs. Donna Campbell, Ann Newton, and Alexis Anke. I also want to thank you for joining me again for this week's edition of TPS Proud Out Loud.
The Local Thread is a production of WGTE Public Media. Episodes can be heard weeknights at 7 on FM 91 or anytime at WGTE.org.
The views and opinions expressed in The Local Thread are those of the hosts of the program and its guests. They do not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of WGTE Public Media.